So we're not talking about money laundering.
No. Again, though, I feel like we have to have that debate on what is money. What if the money laundering has a middleman in it? Where,
I mean,
someone collects money from a group of people, gives the money to another person, that person immediately gives them a check, that person has to deposit said check, and then distribute the money. Well, the whole thing
with money laundering is it's not immediate, right? Laundering money is you take, you like deposit thing in an account.
Yeah.
And then someone like, they the person, someone else using that account then cleans the money. It's like you put it into a business or something.
Yeah, but I thought it's not cleaning from the account, but like the cash itself. Like you have dirty cash, like you stole money from a bank. So like said people have different amounts of money. If that's dirty money, then somebody else will take said dirty money and put it in a clean account, like their business or such, mm-hmm. and they give them clean money back. So like those
but
guys. I mean,
but it would be clean cash, which means, and it takes a while for the cash to be redistributed, you know, because they're not going to have clean money on hand. Mm-hmm. Like the whole point of money laundering is like you put it into a restaurant and then like you give that cash out to just like random strangers or whatever.
So that way they can't trace like large, oh, these are all the serial numbers or so, but now the serial numbers are randomly distributed.
Right. And then you give the, and then they draw money out from like the profits or whatever of the restaurant. And that's, and it's, but it's for the same amount. And that's how you clean the money. Because now, for me, I've never understood money laundering. Like, it's most crimes I can kind of understand, you know, like Grand Theft Auto, you steal a car. Like, the end. Like, that, you know, breaking and entering, assault and battery. Like, these, but money laundering is like that kind of extra level of like almost white collar crime. That involves like Ponzi schemes and things like that, that I just have not, okay. I can't follow.
See, for me, like money laundering is like the second most gangster crime, like mobster related. And then number one is, of course, racketeering. But like those are my top two. Everything else you named, I'm like, oh, mobsters don't do those things. Like mobsters don't steal cars. They would distribute and sell like bigger, they do bigger picture stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like that seems petty, individualistic crimes. GTA, you were basically naming like video game crimes. Is there a video game where you money launder? I'm sure there is.
I mean, I'm assuming you do it in GTA at some point. I can't remember off the top of my head, but you definitely.
Like I've always assumed like take this cash from here to over there or something. And I assume it's because, oh, the cops are looking here for the serial numbers, but then you're going to give us the cash from over there. So, like, I always thought it was so you don't trace the serial numbers, which is why you could launder with cash from one place and cash from another. I like you're sinking it into profit, but that takes time. Like, laundering well, should be quick.
I mean, that's what I've seen whenever I've... one of the Netflix shows I watch is called Ozark.
Uh-huh.
And it's literally a show about a guy who's really good at math... who gets caught up with like the Mexican drug cartels, and he's basically their money launderer. And so the setup for the show is he gets caught skimming, or his partner gets caught skimming or something, and off the top of his head he gives a suggestion for new money laundering to move to the Ozarks, which is like a big vacation spot, and it's not on the radar of like people who are looking for drug cartel stuff. And so the guy gives him a shot. So he and his family move to the Ozarks and they start doing the money laundering. And he essentially like sinks the cartel's money into like, he starts buying things like strip clubs and like a restaurant. And he tries to set up a church. And basically these businesses are how he's laundering the money. And that's so in my head, that's what it's isn't it? Like he puts the money into these businesses and then the businesses make profit and then that profit goes to the cartel and it's all new money and it's fresh and clean or whatever.
Oh, OK. This is a very long and weird intro to people. Yeah, who are expecting a video game
we do not endorse crime or money laundering. This is all purely hypothetical things because we got into a random discussion before the podcast started. And we said we weren't going to talk about money laundering, and then we talked about it. So we're just going to move on now. Ba-da-da-da-da-da.
It's a gamer. We're here. It's a gamer. That's it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Make Me a Gamer. I'm your host, T-Man, and I'm here with, I forgot the stupid intro now. Hold on. Starting over. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Make Me a Gamer, the procedurally generated podcast that's a roguelike for your ears. I've been out of it so long, I've forgotten it. Anyway, I'm your host, T-Man, and I'm here with...
Harvey Z, in the place to be.
Yes, okay. Done. We did it. How are you, Harvey?
I'm doing well. Still stuck on now. Like, what else could we launder? Can we launder...
Your laundry?
No. Like, can we launder a podcast?
What?
That's why I'm like, my brain is now like going down this road.
How would you, what?
Exactly. How would I launder this podcast? Like, can I make a profit off of illegally distributing this podcast? No.
No, because the podcast is free. There is no, right now there is zero profit. No money has gone into this podcast except for the money we spent getting the microphones and the recording device.
Like, which is why I think we need to launder to get that money back somehow.
Okay, again, we do not endorse laundering in any shape or form. FBI, please stop listening to this podcast. My friend Harvey,
come back.
I don't want the FBI people in the van right now are listening. Like, you guys don't have to listen anymore. Okay, we promise we are not committing crimes.
Just download the episode at least, and then like, do they need to play?
Give us a review though.
Yeah, like, yes.
5-star FBI review, please. Thank you. That would help a lot. But seriously, don't not talk about laundering on, like, no.
I think they would have stopped at, like, wait, they're trying to launder a podcast? These guys are not criminal masterminds here.
We're idiots. We're all idiots. The article that came out today of the people who tried to make a podcast and made it 6 episodes and they didn't get a ad deal, so they gave up, like... I felt like sharing that on here because it's like we're almost at 40 now.
It's a milestone. Like, I'm hoping that we keep. I didn't think we would get this far, honestly.
I mean, we're definitely gonna. We're creeping up on a year here. Our year anniversary is in another month or two. So that is, and we'll have to do something special for that episode.
And then I know we promised a lot for episode 100, but that might take a little bit of time based on some of the delays. Yeah.
I feel we're gonna hit our anniversary, and then we're gonna hit 50, which I think are both milestones. We were hoping to get 50 before the anniversary, but like with everything that's gone on, we'll probably hit it still hopefully before the end of the year, I think.
50? Yeah, we should totally. That's like, I don't know how many months now. I'm just like...
Yeah. I think we'll be able to hit 12 more before, like, once we're back from hiatus and back in the groove. Like, we're still technically on hiatus as we're recording this.
Again, I was like, wait,
too much sausage?
Like, when they're listening to this, we've not been on hiatus. We're going. This is not even the first episode back.
Yeah, that's very true. Yeah, sorry, we're giving you sausage again. Yeah, but there was this article that the New York Times wrote today about these two people who made a podcast called The Advice Podcast, I think it was called.
Yep.
And they got, like, microphones and expected, like, people to be knocking down...
They didn't even have microphones.
They recorded on their iPhone.
Yep.
And so they did very little professional work, but thought, like, oh, we're two hot 20-somethings, like...
I don't know. I don't need to object. They were hot, but we don't need to objectify.
I didn't mean hot in, like, physical attractiveness. I meant, like, hip with it, kind of, like, where we've got the jazz to make a podcast. Is that a saying? We've got the jazz?
I'll go with it, sure. But, like, because, to be fair, that was a young Harvey Z. Back in the day, before he knew anything about how to do podcasting, it was, oh yeah, I'll record on my phone, and I'll just record my friends, and profit. Like, that was my goal, too.
Yeah, I mean, you did that a couple times, right? But those have not been ever going to be released to the public.
No. It was, yeah. They were either too rough.
But those weren't even, like, podcasts. That was, like, proto-podcasts.
That was just me recording my friends without their knowledge.
We're not going to talk about that. All right. You know what? Why don't we get right into Harvey Z Snaps? Because we're getting off track here. We're talking too much about crime.
We don't need to commit any crimes. So let's let Harvey Z destroy 50% of something.
Mm-hmm. All right. I haven't really given this one a lot of thought. I've been kind of busy and out of it, so I haven't really had the chance to really put
this could lead the to screws some of the best to stuff. You.
But last week we did video games versus board games, and we started a whole new world, and board games are gone. Mm-hmm. So this week, last week was very broad. This week is going to be very specific.
Okay.
So on the one hand, Stephen King's It.
All right. The book, the movie, everything.
Anything related, the creative work, Stephen King's It. On the other hand, Stephen King's The Stand.
Yeah, you didn't think this one out really well. Have you read both books?
I've not read It.
That's why. Everybody out there who's read It, you know why.
Yeah, I mean, I know why. Like,
you know.
But I mean, all the extra material, like the movies and stuff, don't have that.
I haven't seen the newest movies, but there's no way.
Right, like, there's no way.
There would be, like, outrage in the streets. Excuse me. But The Stand is one of my favorite books of all time.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, and it is a Stephen King work, yes, with one of, like, the most horrifying things in it. And, it seems very easy, and I'm trying to even think of a downside to, like, eliminating
It. So, I feel like...
Why did you choose that one of all the works?
One, because the second one is coming out in, like, another month or two.
Topical.
Yeah, topical. And also, I feel like It has a lot more of, like, cultural... than The Stand. Like, I feel like Stephen King fans are all really on The Stand.
Yes, as are his detractors. Like, The Stand is one of those where you love The Stand if you love Stephen King, and if you hate Stephen King, you point to The Stand as, like, this is bloated and huge and just, right. like,
yeah.
ridiculously all over the place.
I love The Stand. But there's just... So I feel like it's one of those, like, do I keep what Harvey Z wants, or do I keep what the public might want more? Because, like, I think the public might like Tim Curry's It and that sort of stuff more.
I don't know if they even, I mean, Tim Curry was one of my favorite parts of the original It, the films, but, like, I don't know if people appreciate Tim Curry's performance. It's just a really creepy clown. Tim Curry doesn't really lend a lot.
A lot of people like talking about Tim Curry's Pennywise. Like, people were super afraid that the new It would, like, not live up to his performance. So there is, like, a lot of people are afraid of clowns thanks to Tim Curry. Like, this isn't not a big deal.
But have you seen the Stand miniseries or movie? There's
no,
a couple.
No, I have not.
Okay.
I have not.
The 3 hours. No, it's 6 hours. There's 2 3-hour chunks that are... It's big and bloated.
I thought it was 3 2-hour chunks. Wasn't it like a 3-episode miniseries
or
something?
It's 6 hours total, basically.
Yeah, 6 hours total.
And it's actually... You might like it if you... No, I like bad movies.
It was like... Wasn't like Rob Lowe in it and Gary Sinise?
Yeah,
I think?
There's like weirdly or mount... Not weirdly, but like... There's famous
very
people.
90s,
yeah.
right?
I just remember there's a really good performance by whoever plays the Man in Black. The problem is I don't know who plays the Man in Black. But you would like that performance alone, I think. It's because it was so over... It was like an M. Bison-worthy performance. Yeah, this is easy. I'm getting rid of It because all the people who like It the book, fuck you.
All right, that's fair. Cool.
I mean, yes, if I'm thinking about what do I do for the people, it's that. Because uh-huh. lest someone like go, I really like the movie, I need to read the book. Yeah. I'm saving you the trauma. You're
now
welcome.
Now you just remember the movie, you don't have to worry about the book existing anymore.
That book fucked me up. Like, a lot. I didn't think you could write that sort of shit. And it was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, this should be banned.
Well.
And I don't even believe in banning books and stuff. And I was like, just wow. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I never read it. I'm not huge into Stephen King. Like, I've read some of his books. Like, Stand is one of my favorites.
Mm-hmm.
I've read a couple of the Dark Tower books. I didn't finish the whole series.
Okay, it kind of loses the plot in a weird way.
Like I finished Wizard and Glass, and I was like, I don't need to read anymore. Like,
I mean,
That Wizard and Glass... is the best. Yeah. Like, and like, I don't need... Yeah.
Did you read the ones leading up to Wizard and Glass?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I read the first four, basically.
Then you're fine. Yeah. I mean you don't know the ending, I guess, but like...
I know the ending. I've looked it up since then, but like...
Yeah. I'm trying to think, because like it's nice that the Dark Tower is a nice, like, it's just filled with references over and over to various other Stephen King works. So it's kind of a nice, like, if you've read all the rest of like 20, 30, 50, 60 books that he's put out, then you're like, oh, I get this one little reference off to the side. And so for folks like me, super fans and stuff, yes, it's great. And then if you're a detractor, you're like, this is just masturbatory, like, bullshit. And it's like, yeah, but it's my masturbatory bullshit.
Yeah, it's like, I can't think of a good example off the top of my head, but whenever, like, something does something for the fans, and, mm-hmm. like, all the people who are not fans are like, what the fuck is this? And all the fans are like, that is exactly what I wanted. Give me more of that. Yeah. So let's talk about some games.
All right.
I feel like last week we forgot to talk about something, or we missed something, but I don't remember what that was. So we're just going to move on.
Okay. I was about to say, like, but you knew what it was at the end, and you were going to, because I was like, last week was a super Switch heavy episode.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably something that's not Switch related.
Yeah, it wasn't Switch related, but I don't remember what it was. So, what I do have a lot to talk about today is Overwatch, and it's been a while since we've talked about Overwatch.
Yes.
So, this past weekend, the Shanghai Dragons won the Stage 3 playoffs.
It seemed like a big deal. I remember last year.
Last year they went 0-40. Like, yes. They had the longest losing streak in sports history or something like that.
And this is the second season, right?
Yeah, and this is the second season, and they came back. And it was an accomplishment, because to win, the Dragons ended up beating what people consider the three top teams in the league.
Oh.
Like, they didn't even have like an easy like way into the finals or anything. They beat the three elite teams, the teams that everyone said are like a league of their own, and they're going to clearly be the last three or whatever. Like, so Shanghai Dragons were eighth seed. Mm-hmm. In the stage playoffs, they first played against the New York Excelsior and number beat them. Yeah, they were the number one seed. They went 7-0 in this past stage, so they were top seed, and they beat them, I think, 3-1. Then they beat the Vancouver Titans, who have only lost one game the whole season so far this year. They beat them 4-1, and then they beat the San Francisco Shock, who were the stage two champions, 4-3. And it was a big deal, because the first two stage playoffs were the finals were both the Titans versus the Shock. Like, both times they and everyone was just expecting another rematch.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Shanghai Dragons just came in and blew them all out of the water and ended up winning the whole thing, and everyone was just like super excited for it, because, you know, it's this underdog story, it's team that went 0-40 for crying out loud, and they had been sorely underestimated. No one thought they even had the possibility of winning that far.
Like, so I hadn't been really following the season, but I knew prior to like this whole tournament thing popped up in my newsfeed, I remember you guys were really excited that they won a game this year.
Yeah.
I take it they got better than that, at least.
Yeah. Like most sports teams, the team that existed that went 0-40 isn't the Shanghai Dragons now. Like, there's, like, a couple holdovers that are still on the team, but in general, it's, like, new players. So, just like when the Browns go 0-16 and, like, the entire team gets rebuilt from the ground up, you know, it's a similar thing. But it is still the Shanghai Dragons. And so, it was exciting for them to win their first game and break the streak. That's why everyone was excited, because they finally won a game.
How long ago was that?
That was in the first stage. So that was like their third or fourth game they played this season. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so it wasn't... I think right now they're 12-9 over the course of the whole season. There's been 21 games played, and there's going to be 28 total per team. Vancouver Titans are leading at 20-1. And then I think Excelsior are 19-2. And the Shock are 17-5, I want to say. So, like, those are the three top teams, and I think the next team is 13-8. And then, like, there's a bunch of 13-8 and 12-9 teams. And then you get into the lower ones, and then you've got the Washington Justice, who are 2-19.
Ouch. Okay, I was like, I remember also we won two games last I had heard.
Mm-hmm. We have still only won two games.
Okay.
But they've announced a lot of new shit over the course of the week, so I figured I would go into the Overwatch League and Overwatch stuff since it's been a while since we've talked about it.
It has. I just had one more question on the Dragons. How did they get good? Like, did they do a new strategy?
They just got new players and that had more, that gelled better together and had, like, could communicate and have better strategy and things like that. Like, there was a lot of drama around the Shanghai Dragons initially because the original, like, coaching setup or whatever, there was, like, corruption going on. And, nice. So it was, like, the first Chinese team, and I think the Shanghai Dragons initially were, like, the second-tier Chinese players. Like, all the good-tier China players, for whatever reason, were glossed over, but, like... It was... I don't want to say nepotism, but it was some sort of thing where, like, they decided to not use the actual good Chinese players and went with the secondary, second-tier Chinese players. And so that's why they were bad to begin with. Mm-hmm. And it was due to some sort of corruption at, like, the management level. And then once new management came in, they hired some Korean players. Like, they hired Gaguri, who is currently the Overwatch League's only female player. And then over the course of the... Like, they still went 0-40, but then over the offseason, they brought some new people over, some good teams good players that gelled together and had, like, strategies and just ended up, like, they put together a good team that had that sort of,
Cohesion?
You know, cohesion, yeah. So good team cohesion, good, like, camaraderie and all that stuff.
So they're just clicking at this point.
Yeah, and they are also very good at DPS roles. And so up until this point, GOATS has been the primary, strategy. And it's slowly finally loosened up. There was a lot of DPS play.
Really?
This past stage. There was a lot of favoring of 3 DPS, 1 tank, like Hammond. I think it was Hammond, Sombra, Pharah, and then, God, what was the third DPS? I don't remember. But then they would have, like, Mercy and Zenyatta, or Mercy and Lucio, Mercy and Anna was a big duo. Widowmaker was probably the third DPS, something like that, or Doomfist. I know Dragons ran Pharah, Doomfist, and then either Widowmaker or Sombra as the third, as for a lot of their strategies. Like, Youngjin is a really good Doomfist. Like, he kicked ass in the finals.
And so, like, because that's what I was going to wonder, is, like, GOATS is GOATS. Like, I thought GOATS is unbeatable.
Well, so they've been, like, retooling and, like, adjusting. And so the meta has finally shifted enough that other things are viable depending on the map. And, like, essentially what was going on was GOATS was the best, but GOATS requires real heavy teamwork. And, like, you have to be in sync with the rest of your team. And what happened was the teams that were very good at GOATS, like San Francisco Shock, Vancouver Titans, had really good teamwork and very good mechanical skill, and, like, they just did GOATS very well. And a lot of the other teams, instead of playing to their strengths, also tried to play GOATS because GOATS was the best thing to play. And somewhere between stage 2 and 3, like, teams just started being like, well, we're actually good at this other stuff. Let's, you know, force people to play on our ground instead. And enough changes in the meta and, like, balance patches had happened that, like, it was able to be a viable strategy. And so on certain maps, you know, Dragons would go Pharah, Doomfist, Widowmaker, and, you know, there's a certain limitation in GOATS because GOATS is very non-mobile. Like, it's sort of a death ball comp. Mm-hmm. Because Lucio gives you the speed boost, but Reinhardt and Zarya, Brigitte, and who's the last one? No, Reinhardt, Zarya, and Brigitte, all their primary fires are like close distance. Like they and aside from D.Va, there's not a lot of mobility either. So they're ground-based, they can't move around the map very fast. While when you have like a team like Pharah, Doomfist, whatever, like they have a lot of mobility. They can like you can't really the only person that can get to a Pharah is really the Zenyatta or the D.Va, and even then it's not like perfect because there's no hit scan. And anyway, long story short, the meta evolved a little bit, so Goats was still the best on some levels, but it also allowed for the DPS play, and Shanghai Dragons are very good at DPS, and that's where they ended up excelling and winning. And then there's a new... So the big thing that happened... There's other Overwatch League stuff I want to talk about, but today they announced role queue, which is they've both in the actual Overwatch game and now in Overwatch League, all competitive and quick play matches are going to be restricted to 2-2-2 formations. So Goats is no longer able to be used in competitive play and won't be used in Overwatch League starting in stage 4.
I think you lost me. What's a 2-2-2 for?
2 DPS, 2 tanks, 2 supports.
So you have to have
2-2-2. And Goats was 3 tank, 3 supports. Mm-hmm. So it is now no longer able to be used. And because it was those 6 synergizing so well, that it's just going to be something completely different. What everyone thinks the current meta will be with 2-2-2 is going to be the Yoinkin' Oink, or they're calling it the Oinkin' Yoink, but
yeah.
I call it the Yoinkin' Oink because that's the actual order that it happens. It's Orisa Roadhog, and Orisa has an ability called Halt, which you shoot a ball out, and when you detonate it, it like draws everyone within a specific area into a single spot, so it just like yoinks them.
Mm-hmm.
And then Roadhog has his hook. And so what the combination is Orisa yoinks them all to a single spot, and Roadhog just aims at that spot, throws his hook, yoinks somebody in, kills them. Yoink and oink.
Versus oink and yoink is what it's called,
actually. Yeah, it's called the oink and yoink, but Roadhog is oinking at the end of it, not at the beginning. I object. I think it should be yoink and oink.
All right.
But like it's based around Orisa's barrier. And so like you're behind the barrier, and if they're running the similar comp, you yoink them above the barrier and Roadhog grabs them and pulls them in.
I was about to say, couldn't you do this with the Zarya? But Zarya's...
Zarya's is an ultimate ability, while Orisa's is an ability on cooldown and can be used far more often.
Mm-hmm.
And also, Orisa is considered a main tank, while Zarya is an off tank. But yeah, so that is probably going to be the meta. We'll see what happens when it actually comes out. There was a lot of oink and yoink. San Francisco Shock played Oink and Yoink against Dragons when they were losing and almost made a reverse sweep comeback.
Wait, like, so are the competitive players already having to switch to the 2-2-2?
Well, they were definitely using a 2-2-2 formation, although they weren't restricted to it.
Okay.
But apparently the competitive players have known about it for a while, so they've already been kind of practicing it. And know, like, this wasn't going to be something that was surprise dropped on them.
Mm-hmm.
But it really changes everything about both the Overwatch League competitive and the regular play of Overwatch, because now, like, when you queue up to play either a quick play game or a competitive game, you choose which role you want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the wait time is different depending on the role. So obviously it's going to be a lot longer for DPS because that's what everyone wants to play. And you'll get rewards for queuing something that's needs. So likely people who queue as tank and supports will get extra loot boxes, something like mm-hmm. that. In competitive, you're going to have different SR based on the role instead of an overall SR. So like your DPS skill level could be different than your tank skill level, then different than your support skill level.
So it seems like they're committing to this whole thing going onwards out.
Yeah, like apparently they've been trying to work out the kinks in this and make it good for like a year, according to the developer update. So like this wasn't just something they pulled out in response to Goats. Like this is something they've been wanting to do for a while, but have kind of wanted to make sure everything worked properly.
It sort of makes sense. My mind is now wrapping this around like basketball or so, where you need to have certain positions.
Yeah.
you can't just have everybody be a forward or everybody be a guard. Like, no, there's roles that people play.
Right. And originally, Overwatch was kind of pitched on the idea that everyone can switch to anything in any condition, you know, like if you want to play a support, but then like it looks like you need a tank, you can switch to it. Like whatever was going on, you could just be whatever you wanted to be and like had that freedom. But what ends up happening is you get four people who play DPS, and then you don't have enough healing or like, you know, whatever. And so this role queue, I feel like, makes the game a lot more playable, because the way Overwatch is designed, you're supposed to have tanks, you're supposed to have DPS, you're supposed to have support, you're supposed to have all three roles filled, and a lot of times people don't want to play the team portion of the game, they just want to play a shooter, and yeah. So they pick Hanzo and don't care.
So then, if you do pick, like, DPS or you pick support, in the middle of a match, though, you could switch the character
correct
to a different support, or so if you are a supporter.
Right, yeah. Like, you can pick any support, and if you need to switch to a different support, you can do that. But you can't, like, you can't have a support switch to Mei to stall on the point or something like that. Only the DPS players can pick DPS things. And
that might lead to greater specialization of the players themselves as, like, or are they already like, this guy's a DPS specialist?
I mean, that in pro play, especially in Overwatch League, that's already a thing. Like, the problem was, though, because GOATS was so popular, you had DPS players who were known for like DPS stuff on a tank or a support, because like that was just the best thing for them to be doing. Mm-hmm. And now they will actually get to play what they're supposed to be on. And we'll see what happens. I'm excited for it. Like, it's revitalized my interest in Overwatch. Like, I can see myself playing it a lot more now, because it just gets tiring playing with 5 DPS and then no one paying attention to where your healer is. And, like, why am I dying? It's because all of you are DPS and I am the lone healer and cannot heal all of you.
And it's also kind of like, GOATS on GOATS gets kind of boring after a while.
Yeah.
I mean, it's exciting style. Like, everybody has to use their ults, but then it's GOATS.
Yeah, GOATS, as for me, GOATS has probably been the least entertaining meta, because it's just a lot of footseeing until the ultimates. And then the ultimates are what, it's just one big, like, light show of a fight. And then it's over with. In other metas, and hopefully once the 2-2-2 comes around, like, you can get a lot of scrappy fights where a team will lose one or two people, but off the back of, like, a really good DPS or, like, some crazy ultimate play, you, like, switch the balance around, and then suddenly it's, like, 3-3, and they're, like, brawling all over the point, and, like, oh, if he gets a headshot, he might win. Oh, no, this guy sniped. Like, it gets real exciting. While GOATS, pretty much every time it's all right, one person gets a pick, the six-team synergy now has broken down, and the other six just swarm and kill the rest of them, and the fight's over. Like, there was very rarely a back and forth in the GOATS meta. Like, most of the time, whichever team got the first pick in a team fight just ended up wiping the other team, or the other team would just immediately retreat, because 5-on-6 in GOATS just doesn't do anything. But 5-on-6 with DPS and supports, like, a Widowmaker, 2 headshots on supports, and suddenly, like, your team's back in the game, right? You can still win this fight. So it's, for me, I am looking forward to it. And while I'm looking forward to it, and while I hate GOATS, I question doing it in this season. Like,
midway through?
Like, it's not even midway through. Like, we're on stage 4. Like, we're going to have, we have 7 more games and then the final playoffs. And I feel like this is such a major change that we're going to end up with a winner for the season that might not actually encapsulate what the season was about. You know what I mean? Like, some team that kind of squeaked into the playoffs but is really good at DPS might end up winning it all because of this new format. and I'm not sure how I feel about it. I think they should, even though I'm ready for goats to be over with, like, I am 100% down for goats to go away. Mm-hmm. I also think that this big a balance change should have waited until season three.
I don't disagree, actually, because it's, you named the top three teams, like the Excelsior, the Vancouver folks, and then the Shock folks. Like, they all were good at goats, basically.
Well, Excelsior was all right at goats. They're just such a good team that they pretty much excel with whatever.
Okay. Because I was thinking, like, oh, the finals, maybe the finals do have to be for season two. The best goats versus the best goats. Like, who is ultimate goats or whatever.
Well, we've already had ultimate goats twice with Titans versus Shock in the stage playoffs.
Okay.
So I'm not too upset that probably won't be happen a third time, but at the same time, the Titans and Shock and Excelsior have kind of been the dominant forces for this entire season. And while I'm all a fan of upsets, like, it's almost like if 3/4 of the way through the American football season they decided that all field goals or like all extra points would have to be an extra 20 yards away, or like the field suddenly got 15 yards longer or something, you know, like some major change to how the game is actually played, like the structure of the base game, to the point that like the players, it could seriously change everything about like a game structure.
Part of me is thinking then, like, because I know you've mentioned like the Asian teams aren't goats heavy, you were saying, or maybe it's just the Shanghai Dragons, but I feel now they have a huge or a bigger advantage, because perhaps I know there was an Asian team out there, was it the Spark, that didn't play goats?
It was the Chengdu Hunters.
Okay.
They had,
who are they?
They had Ameng as Hammond, and he was like the wrecking ball extraordinary, and like they just refused to play goats most of the time, and everyone loved them for it because it was a unique style when everyone else was doing goats.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, we'll see how this actually turns out for everyone.
That's my season prediction, at least. Like, assuming it's not a hard reset, though. Your scores are still what they are.
Yeah.
So it's going to still favor like the heavier teams that were still probably have larger win percentages. But I feel like maybe in the finals, especially if the finals are 2-2-2s, I'm predicting, I think there will be an Asian team that will win the whole thing this year.
Okay. I mean,
is that a hard prediction, or is that like,
You saying like one of the teams from the Asian, like continent. An actual Asian continent, not like just a group of Koreans?
No, I'm not saying that. That would be way too, no. I'm saying a team from the continent of Asia, not Europe, not the United States. I don't know if there's any other teams, will win it.
Spark have a good shot. Shanghai Dragons have a good shot. Hunters in Charge are not sure, but Seoul Dynasty is kind of on the bubble as well. It could be a thing. I'll keep you updated on your prediction.
Okay.
There is one more thing with Overwatch League. So they announced the format for next season, and the Overwatch League is going to be coming to all the home teams now. It's not just going to be in LA. They're going to do 52 homestand events. What they did was they divided up each division. So they already had the Atlantic and Pacific divisions, and now the Pacific division is also divided into East Pacific and West Pacific, and Atlantic is divided into North Atlantic and South Atlantic.
Okay.
And each of those like subsets has like 5 teams in it. So there's still 10 teams in each division, but then each subset has 5 and 5. And that is probably related to the homestand stuff. And like kind of East Pacific is all 5 Asian teams.
Okay. Yeah. Good, easy. That was going to be the hardest one to like travel to, I suppose.
Then West Pacific are the 5 West Coast, or the 4 West Coast teams, and then Dallas.
Okay.
Then South Pacific is, or not South, South Atlantic is Philly, DC, Florida, Atlanta, and Houston. So we had 2 Texas teams. One was in Atlantic, one was in Pacific. So we ended up like, even though they're the central ones, like they ended up,
you would think they would get more matches with each other or easy travel time, but they're in completely different.
Yep. And then, the last one, North Atlantic, is probably the most difficult one, because that one's Toronto, New York, Boston, London, and Paris. So that one has the biggest spread mm-hmm. in terms of like where everyone is located. And so that one's probably going to be the hardest to like manage. But essentially what they've said is 52 homestands, which is what I've gathered is there's probably going to be 26 weeks of Overwatch. So two homestands a week, probably one Atlantic and one Pacific where the teams will go. There's going to be bye weeks. And each team is going to host two homestands for sure. So each team gets two home shows or matches or whatever. And they play multiple matches per homestand. So it's not like you only get one, you're at home for one game and then move on. It'll probably be at least two matches, one per day is how they usually go. And then the remaining 12 are divided each, like smaller division of five gets three extra games. So for a total of 52. And so it looks like just, I don't know if they did a lottery or they figured out where would be the most popular ones or what, but Dallas is going to have three extra for their division. Guangzhou, the Charge, are going to have the three extra for their division. I don't know who has the North Atlantic division, but DC is actually getting the extra three for the South Pacific.
So there's going to be five matches.
There's going to be five matches of Overwatch League in DC.
All involving the DC team, though, obviously.
Probably. Almost assuredly, they would be playing these games.
Okay.
Like, I can't imagine we would have a DC game where the Justice weren't playing at least one match. So and they've also changed the schedule that games will only be on Saturday and Sunday next year. It's the schedule way it works now. They do Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I'm assuming because when they did the Atlanta homestand, they started like earlier, like the game started at 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, as opposed to like 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is when they would start when the Pacific. Like when they were in LA on the weekend. So I assume it'll be something like the Atlantic games are like 11:30, like so something like 11 to 2 or 11 to 3 in the Eastern Standard Time. And then Pacific games will be later somewhere like in the 8 o'clock range at night where the Overwatch games are normally played now. Mm-hmm. So they fit like eight games on Saturday, eight games on Sunday. I did the math. It's something around that. Like they've been doing 16 games a week on like that's the pretty average. Most weeks have 16 games, four Thursday, four Friday, four Saturday, four Sunday. And so if they do somewhere in the neighborhood of eight games per homestand per week, four on Saturday, four on Sunday, that totals out to 16 because you've got an Atlantic and a Pacific. And in my brain, I don't know how they're going to officially organize it, but in my brain, that's how they've sorted it out.
And like the tournaments or the finals basically are always going to be in LA or?
So they're getting rid of the stage playoffs because of the amount of moving around. Mm-hmm. And like, this is the first season of like having actual jet lag and players having to travel a lot, and they want to see how it goes, I guess. They want to make it easier on them, so they're not going to have the stage playoffs. There's only going to be the league playoffs at the end. What was your question?
It was basically that, like, where was it going to be, the final,
championship match? Yeah. Like, so last year, the finals was in New York. This year, the finals are in Philly. So I assume it'll be something similar to that. Like, you know, like each year, the Super Bowl is in a different city. So I assume maybe they'll do L.A. for next year's because it's been such a, like, central place for the last couple years.
When is it in Philly?
End of September, I believe, is the finals this year.
Are we road tripping?
Do you want to? Like, I haven't honestly considered it, but I might be down to look at tickets and see.
It's on a weekend or?
Yeah, it's on a weekend. I think it's on a Saturday and Sunday. I'd have to check. Like, the problem is we don't know who's going to be playing.
I mean, I care? Not really.
Okay, yeah.
My true, team fair. Is not going to be in there, I have a feeling.
Yeah, I don't think the Justice is. I think the Justice are mathematically eliminated.
Already?
Well,
not
I mean,
even starting stage four. They've just.
I think. Well, they're 2-19 right now. So the best they can do is 9-19, And the way the playoffs work is the top six are guaranteed playoffs. And then 7 through 12 do like a mini tournament where the top two get in and as the 7th and 8th seed. So they have to at least make 12th. And currently, I think they're 20th. Like, I think they're dead last. So they would have to pretty much win out and have 13 through 19 not win anything or win very little for them to have a chance. And they may not technically be mathematically eliminated yet, but they're pretty close.
Okay, fair enough. But Philly, it's not so far away. Yeah. It is a road trip. I'm just thinking about it. I know October is rougher for me. That's why end of September, you say.
Yep. September 20th, I want to say.
Oh, good. Not the last week of September, actually. Yeah. Even better. Suddenly it becomes viable more so. I can't do beginning of September. Can't do end of September. Those middle 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, maybe we'll get a special edition of Make Me a Gamer on the Road and go to the Overwatch League Finals. Have like a... outing with T-Man and Harvey Z, interview some celebrities, Overwatch League celebrities.
DJ Khaled.
I don't think they'll be bringing him back. So I don't really have a game of the week this week. I could talk about Days Gone, but I think I want to save that for like another episode where I can go more in depth about it. But I did want to share with you something that I think you'll like a lot. So last week we were talking about Slay the Spire, which was your Switch game that like sold you on a Switch Lite.
Almost, yeah.
Almost. So this morning I was listening to a podcast. It's the Waypoint Podcast. They're the Vice Games division now. I think they switched from being called Waypoint to Vice Games. But their podcast is still Waypoint. And one of the people on the podcast talked about this game that is releasing tomorrow. So when you listen to this, it'll be out. And I think it's out on Steam. So it's just a PC game for now. Not Switch yet. But all good things come to Switch. So maybe we'll see it. It's a game called Nowhere Prophet. And it is a very similar to Slay the Spire. It's a deck-building roguelike game.
All right.
That adds a tactics style element to it, like Final Fantasy Tactics-esque battles where you like move people, your car. I'm not entirely sure how it works because I haven't played it yet because it comes out tomorrow. So this person was on the podcast talking about like a preview copy they had. And the way it works is you're this kind of prophet-y type person who can speak to machines after an apocalypse. And the satellite comes down and is guiding you to this crypt. And you gain followers because they think you're a prophet of some sort. And like, so they're following you to this crypt based on this satellite speaking to you. And so you have two decks. One is your followers. So like the people that are following you that you obtain as you walk or are making this journey are your deck. So, and I guess you play them and put them like out on a board as opposed to just like playing the cards, and like range and things like that add like a tactical element to where you place your dudes. And then your other deck is of like abilities that you yourself can do. And so they like change what's going on or like attacks or things like that. And then it's just a roguelike where you like navigate and you're like, you go from point A to point B, and some events might happen if you go to certain places or you get new followers. And it sounded really, really cool. It's also supposed to be very difficult, apparently. But I figured I would bring this up to you because you already like deck building and roguelike.
Yes.
And then the added thing of it being like kind of like a tactical RPG on top of that.
It almost seems like too much of a good thing. Like, let's take everything you like and smush it all together doesn't always work.
Right. Like, you don't want ice cream on pizza and bananas and peanut butter.
However, I would always take a bite of that.
Yeah, that's weird.
In the name of science. You know me.
Oh, yeah. In the name of science, I know you would do it.
So it's something to keep an eye on.
Tasted soap.
Did I mention? Yeah. We've talked about the soap.
I don't know if we've talked about the soap on here.
I mean, yeah, there's the soap. I was like, there's the soap, there's the milk, We should just get into it.
All right, if we're going to talk about one, you need to talk about the chocolate milk, because that one was that's just like pure.
Was that the first science experiment?
I think soap came first.
And then there was a light bulb as well.
Yeah, I don't remember what order it was.
So this is Harvey Z is a man of science. Harvey Z is a very intelligent man of science.
Intelligent, we'll see about that.
This was back in the days of like AIM Messenger to like
data. Oh yeah, this was old school.
Back in like college when like Harvey Z had some free time. And Harvey Z would run experiments, basically, when he was bored.
Very, very loose experiments, let's say that.
The experiments basically consisted of, I had a hypothesis, much like today, actually, with Can We Launder a Podcast? An idea comes to me, and I try to execute it, and then the key thing is, because I'm a man of science, you have to repeat it regardless of the results.
You have to do it twice, just to make sure the results are consistent.
And so, I believe, like, the first one, I think, was the light bulb. Where I was like, man, my light bulb looks really hot. Let me touch it. And then it burnt me. And I believe I texted you going, it was really hot, but was that just a fluke? Or is it just really hot? And then I tested it a second time. We solved that experiment. A hot light bulb remains hot. It burnt me twice. So that was the first. The next one was based on one of my all-time classic favorite movies, A Christmas Story. In that movie, the little Ralphie is forced to put a bar of soap in his mouth. And then the mom, in that iconic scene as well, wonders what it's like. She puts the bar of soap and spits it out. I happen to have, by my desk at that time, an unopened bar of soap. And I believe then you probably, I don't know what you were doing, but would get probably this little pop-up of like, it's experiment time with Harvey Z. I'm going to do this. I wonder what'll happen.
I just want to be clear. I did not encourage this in any way. I was just a bystander. He did this on his own. I was like the control. Just like, I was.
Should something happen?
I was just there.
You needed to live to tell the tale. Should something happen? And again, I needed to record my stuff, and I'm not going to record it for a journal or something. This is back in the day. I just texted you the results. I put the bar of soap in my mouth. Again, experiment. Soap tastes awful. It tastes really, really bad. I think it wasn't Dove soap. It might have been, but it was like a gentle soap, but it was still pretty, I was going to say yucky, but that's a childlike term. It was not flavorful. Then you get the pop-up, though, like 5 minutes later, though. But in the name of science, was that a fluke? Or maybe it tastes different a second time? And so I did it again. And newsflash, soap that tastes like soap will continue to taste like soap. And that led to, I believe, experiment number three was...
Experiment number three was less of an experiment, more of, I don't have anything in my kitchen.
Harvey Z was broke at that time.
Yeah.
Harvey Z had, I believe, in his kitchen that breakfast morning, some cereal, but Harvey Z did not have milk, but Harvey Z had a bottle of chocolate milk. But
adult chocolate milk, I think is what it was, right?
What was it?
Wasn't it adult chocolate milk, or was it chocolate wine?
It was chocolate wine, but the chocolate wine was chocolate milk flavored. And it's a chocolate wine milk. Like, they called itself wine. It was like equivalent.
The point was, it was alcohol that was chocolate flavored, and he put it in his cereal bowl cereal.
It was milky. It was a milk-like substance. So
it was wine, aka alcohol, that was supposed to taste like chocolate milk.
But it did not look like wine. You've had this too. It was creamy looking. Sort of like an Irish cream look or something like that.
A little bit.
It's, again, I'm not an idiot here. Please. I looked at it and I was like, this looks like milk. I don't have milk. I wonder if chocolate milk wine will look and taste like cereal milk. And I tried it. That time, it was not good. I repeated it only because, again, I was hungry. It's breakfast, and I poured an entire bottle of wine / milk.
You just try. The thing is, the thing that
it was like, the most college breakfast I ever had.
I mean, you poured the entire thing into the bowl. You didn't like test it with a little bit.
Well, so
you just
had
went
the chocolate
full
milk.
On.
I had the chocolate milk wine already. It wasn't like I didn't know what that tasted like.
Right, but you didn't try it with a little bit of cereal first.
I had breakfast. I had my bowl.
You can eat your cereal dry.
No, I'm not a monster.
How dare you? How dare you?
This is, I don't eat dry cereal, sir.
Rude. Like, dry cereal is the only way to eat cereal.
No, there is no cereal that I would enjoy. Like, I am not a six-year-old child that picks out, like, marshmallows and stuff.
I eat all the damn cereal when it's dry. I just want to be clear. I'm not a six-year-old either. And but I eat the cereal dry. Milk is disgusting. You're not supposed to have milk after you're, like, a little kid anymore anyway. Like, that's an actual science thing that I've seen.
This is why people like you get lactose intolerant. You stop drinking milk. You just need to constantly keep taking the milk.
No, the whole point of lactose intolerance is that adults aren't supposed to be having dairy.
Like, they need to grow. Harvey Z is a growing man.
No, the whole thing is, as adults, our bodies don't need the dairy anymore, which is why people get lactose intolerance, because we can't digest it anymore.
But then you give up on, like, cheese and milk and, like, I know we're arguing on milk, but cheese and ice cream and, like, all sorts of cream.
I'm aware of that, but the thing is, so you Americans that. Americans are the biggest cheese people in the world. Like, no one else has cheese as much as we do.
And goddammit, I'm not going to lose my American right to cheese. I have to inoculate myself with milk.
Oh, God. What's the quote from Thank You for Smoking? It's like, the great state of Vermont will not apologize for its cheese.
And it shouldn't have to. Needless to say, though, because I poured the bowl of cereal into the bowl, I can't put the cereal back into the box.
I mean, that is very true, but you could still only test a little bit of it.
That would require a second bowl.
Okay, fair. Broke,
like,
Harvey
again,
Z.
I'm a broke college person at this point. Yeah. Like that, and I'm surprised that you didn't counter with, you could put dry cereal back into a box. I like that you agreed with me on that principle, though.
I mean,
it's been taken out of the box. It's now...
Yeah, no, once it comes out of the box, it doesn't go back in.
I agree with you on that 100%. Yeah,
like taking it out of the box means you're going to eat it or it's getting thrown away. Like, you can't do anything else with it at that point.
And I'm not going to eat dry cereal, so I poured a sufficient amount of milk into the bowl. Well, milk-like substance, i.e. the wine. And that was the whole bottle of the rest of the bottle of the wine. So the problem, the wine is okay on its own in small quantities. Cereal with milk is great. Cereal with wine gets really, you get soggy cereal, which is the worst parts of cereal without the creaminess of the milk.
You know how you don't get soggy cereal?
No.
Eating it dry?
Again. Because
that way it doesn't ever get soggy. It's always dry.
Soggy, milky cereal
stays crunchy.
Fine. The problem is alcohol with random, like, sugary bits in it didn't work out very well. I think that was the problem. It was, yes, so you probably got the little boop.
Yeah, I don't think I got a boop for that one. I think that one was, like, you told me later. Like, I had alcohol with my cereal this morning. It was not good.
Yes.
Because, like, that was, breakfast time was different. Like, we didn't, like, at that, I think that one, that was definitely after college. So we weren't, like, on AIM 24/7 anymore.
That was, I was by myself, and that was a sad meal that I had. Yeah, that was a sad breakfast.
All right, anyway, so I'll probably end up getting Nowhere Prophet at some point. It's on my ever-growing list of games to get when I have money, which, I don't know, we'll see when that happens. Yeah, that's an episode. Overwatch bracketed by Harvey Z's random thoughts on things.
Science experiments. All in the name of science, baby.
Yeah, we're gonna figure out if we can launder a podcast based on science. Like,
and we'd have to do it twice to get away with it.
All right, where can they find you, Harvey Z?
They can find me on Twitter at the Z is silent with an A for the.
That's not bad. You're getting better at explaining yourself having a really stupid Twitter name.
It's not that stupid. Yeah, it's stupid.
You can find me on Twitter at TMANPlaysGames. You can find our podcast at Make Me a Podcast. You can always email us at MakeMeAGamerPodcast@gmail.com. I almost lost that one. And you can find my writings at TMANWrites.com whenever I actually get around to doing them. That is everything. I don't really have anything else. So, Harvey Z, final thought?
Nope, I just went blank on, like, I was like, do I want to go with more crime-related stuff? And then I was just like, do I argue with you more on milk and cereal and such? I feel like I've won that battle, though.
No, you didn't win. It's dry cereal, always.
this should be like a snap right here. Dry cereal versus wet cereal.
No, I'm not going to ask you to snap that because I know what you would do.
Yes, it should. You should. Okay, viewers out there, please write in. Wet cereal or dry cereal?
I already know the viewers are going to agree with you.
See, because,
but I still am adamant that fucking cereal can be eaten crunchy.
All cereals.
Yeah.
Not, you, like, even, like, Cheerios is fine. That's the classic.
Cheerios is fine. Brown,
yeah, that's for children. Like, Corn Flakes or Raisin Bran?
Yeah, I've had Corn Flakes. I've had Raisin Bran without milk.
You deprived poor, like, you've had it with milk, though, right?
No. Like, I haven't drank milk since my parents stopped forcing it on me when I was, like, a kid. Like,
breastfeeding?
No. No. Not breastfeeding. But, like, the whole, yeah, like, you know, drink a milk bottle or glass of milk with breakfast or, you know, whatever. Like, when I have not voluntarily chosen to drink milk in years.
And you like cheese and dairy.
Yeah.
You just don't drink milk?
Yeah. I don't need to drink milk. Ugh. It's disgusting.
I mean, there's like skim milk for people like you who want like less dairy. That's like water. It's just like white creamy water. Like, why not go with
white that? Creamy water?
Like, why? That why is... did you oh, okay. give it up?
I don't like it. I don't like ice cream is fine. Turn the milk into cheese or ice cream or whatever. Like, I don't drink it. Curdle like, it. Like,
I'm shocked here, people. Like, and you're not lactose intolerant. You don't have any.
Not as far as I know.
You just voluntarily chose to stop drinking milk.
Yeah.
Coffee? Do you put milk in it?
I don't drink most coffees. I have frappuccinos if I have a coffee.
All right, that has dairy, but it's not the.
Yeah, it's like a blended
beverage. Okay, yeah, that's milkshakes don't count probably either for you.
I mean, yeah, milkshake is like ice cream. Just you drink it.
If the ice cream melts in a milkshake.
Oh, the ice cream doesn't melt in a milkshake. Are you kidding me? The milkshake is done.
Okay, you're not gonna, like
if I don't. You I don't fuck around with milkshakes.
Okay.
All right, this was an extended outro.
I'm just like, I'm still shocked. Like, this is just a real, this is not pod. This is just milk. Like, you are my friend and I've known you for this long and I never realized you just stopped drinking milk.
Yeah, I don't have milk. You can ask anybody.
Like, all right, that's it, people.